is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, joins me as my co-host, and we welcome Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, is going to help us understand a complication of violence in Syria. This is within hours. PBS reporting. Israel's army said Monday, these hours, it has struck military tanks in southern Syria where government forces and Bedouin tribes clashed with Druze militias. Malcolm, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The Druze are immensely important to Israel. Israel has occupied major pieces of southern Syria. This is Soweda province, which borders Jordan and has the city of Dara, where the rebellion began in 2011, I believe, at the end of 2010. But now we have the Bedouin tribes attacking Druze militias, Bedouin sponsored by the so-called Syrian National Army, which is American equipment in the hands of former al-Qaeda shooters. And the Israelis have sent the IAF in. Okay, Malcolm, help me understand this. Good evening to you.
Good evening to both of you. And this is, for me, a very sensitive subject because I'm very close to the Druze community and have been for many years. And I've been in touch with them through much of last night and during the day today. They tell the story of the foreign fighters. It's not just Bedouin. There are foreign fighters enlisted by ISIS, which is the basis, root of the current regime, coming out of that background in Idlib, which they controlled before they took over the Damascus and the regime in a couple of days. They're talking about radicalized militias. We know that a short while ago there was an attack on the Christians. Then there was an attack also on the Alawites, and perhaps 1,500 were killed. And now they're going after the Druze community, which has always seen itself as independent. As you know, there's a large Druze community in Israel, and this area is adjacent. And Israel set up a hospital, a field hospital for the Druze, because they were not getting any kind of treatment and were not free to travel. So Israel, which is in parts of Syria, has been helping them and trying to protect them, as well as the Christians and other small groups, and made this a condition in the negotiations that also the Kurds, who are on the other side of Syria and who watch this very closely because feel that they could be next. And again, you have outside influences, Turkey, Qatar, others playing a role here. And this is a very serious matter after the killing of the Alawites in Latakia and Tartus and that region. Now coming in with tanks and heavy equipment against the Druze population, which has not risen up against them, and there's no civil war that they launched that would they can use to justify this attack. They have offered them to the Syrian government, I understand, offered them that they could have control of Soweda, but they have to give up their arms, and they know giving up their arms is in their minds tantamount to suicide. So you have, there have been ongoing discussions. There's a special envoy of the United States, whom I don't think they look to with great trust. And the fear also of Turkey's dominant role. Most of all, I think the Shara government is looking to pacify the population to any roots of any kind of resistance. All of the minority groups who make a good part of the Syrian population want to have independence and look to a confederation or some arrangement of that type. But the attacks on the small villages and then on the larger population, there many people have been killed. And it is very it's very tragic, because this could have been avoided if the West had stepped in, as they have for others, just to put the markers down and say that we're going to be there to protect them. Israel has lived up to its commitment, and I think that is a message to the region as well.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes, Malcolm, during Prime Minister Netanyahu's recent visit, you had a chance to talk with him. Is there anything you can share with us about that?
Well, yes, I did have some time alone with him and participated in some of the bigger meetings. But I would say that he seemed satisfied with the visit. He met with all of the leadership. It was really not a ceremonial visit. He didn't have dinners. He didn't have other events. He had a couple of press briefings. But even in terms of Jewish and Christian leaders, we met all together with him. He looked very, very tired, I have to tell you. But I think he really spent a lot of time in serious discussions on multiple fronts, Lebanon, Gaza, Syria, and certainly about the follow-up to Iran, which had to be the primary issue, and the concerns, as we have seen, materialize even before, but since his during and since his visit. I think those were the primary things, and his praise for the president, his sense that they were more or less in conjunction. There was an expectation that there might have been a Gaza deal, but the Hamas has turned down the proposals that were put forward by Witkoff, by others, the Qataris as well. So right now there seems to be still a stalemate. Israel is operating in Gaza with great success in recent days, capturing many terrorists. Hamas seems to be trying to kidnap his soldiers. They tried to kidnap a soldier that they had killed and was stopped at the last minute. So Gaza remains a highly sensitive area. There is conflict going on. But as long as they reject the deal and don't accept the plans for reconstruction, other things that have been put forward, we're likely to see this continue.
And Malcolm, there have been external and internal developments regarding Iran, correct?
Many. And you know, it's interesting that it gets so little recognition or reportage. For instance, the internal situation, there is no bread. There are long, long lines at bakeries. They have closed down many of the bakeries. They are short of energy. They're short of wheat. So this has become a very serious issue. And and having no bread is perhaps more than anything else a precursor to domestic unrest. There is a lot of it anyway. There are increasing numbers of executions and more repression. It's being reported across the board in various cities and places. There have been 1,000 arrests or more, but we know that there are many executions, continuing the pattern that began earlier this year, where they are outpacing, even though it was a record last year, they're outpacing it now. Russia has urged them to accept the zero enrichment proposition. They kicked the IEA out of Iran, the Atomic Energy Agency inspectors. And they left Iran, and they've suspended all cooperation with them. And you remember the report in May that Iran had almost 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium, the 200 kilograms that we talk about, and that we believe much of it remains intact, some of it perhaps underground. We can discuss that. But the internal situation is certainly one of concern. To the Ayatollah, who has appeared once that I know of in public. There's a lot of dissension growing within the country about the future and about succession and what is likely to happen. So we have then the new addition to the IEA business. Germany is requesting the UN to reimpose the international sanctions. I think they were called snapback under the JCPOA, and they're supposed to come in effect on July 15th. So this is another factor. And the response is that they're issuing fatwas, religious orders, to kill the president, to kill Netanyahu, to kill others. This is very scary because what they say, they do. You know, it's not hypothetical when it comes to Iran. And the fatwa stated that the punishment for Trump is the same as for an enemy of Allah and Islam, Muhammad, and that is death. and the assembly of experts who are close to Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader, and the regime's Friday preachers are explicitly calling for Trump's assassination. And the religious elite also called on young Muslims and cells of resistance across the world. And John, you know how many times we've talked about the Iranian cells of resistance in the United States, ordering them to act and to the fight against Trump as a religious obligation, and that they would get entry into paradise as a result. And these calls are coming from the top and being echoed in the street and through much of the society. So we're heading what could be a religious war as well.
I want to clarify about Fordo. There have been reports from Israel, I believe, that all the enriched material was not damaged or destroyed. Does anyone know where what remains is located? Is it at Fordo? Is Fordo being rebuilt? Do you know, Malcolm?
So they're not rebuilding, because that's something that is being monitored. But the Israelis seem to say, and Israeli intelligence indicates, that the enriched uranium remaining at Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan, sites that were hit last night, had not been moved, as had been reported. But they also suggested that Iranians might still be able to gain access to Isfahan, but it would be hard to remove the material from there. So they're leaving it there as it is right now, as far as we know. But they have it, and the general assessment that is that they were set back 2 to 4 years. It's not a permanent obliteration of their nuclear program.
But enriched material does exist, 60% does exist. It was not destroyed. Is that correct?
That is the belief now, yes.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. When we come back, Hezbollah and the Houthis, two arms of the brain octopus in Iran. I'm John Batchelor.